You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team Correspondent. And I am joined today with Greg Borum, who is the Director of Advocacy at Children First Communities and Schools. Greg, thank you so much for joining.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for
having me. It is always a pleasure. It's been a while since you and I have had a chance to sit down and kind of talk about some of the work that you've been involved with, which is a lot. For the listeners out there, do you mind sharing just a little bit about your organization, Children First Communities and Schools?
Yes. Children First Communities and Schools works with children and families to make sure that children can reach their full potential. We have student support specialists in 5 local schools working directly with the schools and with children and their families, as well as after-school learning centers. And then we also do public policy advocacy because we know that that's really going to be how we're going to realize change long term.
And we're going to talk a little bit about the public policy aspects of it, where you can get really wonky on us. But side note, you all are moving, right?
Yeah, we have just relocated as of this week. All of our offices out to a couple of portable units at Emmett Elementary School.
Awesome. So, and that'll give you all an opportunity to just be like a little bit more direct, right?
Yeah, we've always had a family resource center presence out there, as well as staff in the school for the past 20 plus years. And so now we'll all be kind of headquartered out there.
That's great.
And yeah, it's change is good.
I'm sure the folks at United Way building will certainly miss you though.
Yeah. Well, there'll be a lot of meetings still happening there. So, some folks may not even realize I've ever left.
There you go. I want to start off a little bit with the family friendly, affordable Bunkum. I have heard about this initiative, in a lot of different settings. You have a lot of different partners. I don't think we've had a chance to talk about this on air, but would you mind kind of talking a little bit about how this came to be and what the focus is around, it's a bit of a mouthful, family-friendly, affordable Bunkum?
Yes, and for the insiders, we abbreviated that to FFAB,
fab.
Or FAB. So we think it's...
You have to really emphasize the
right.
F because it's a double.
Right, it's a fabulous idea. So yeah, that this all came about a year ago. So last summer, when it's a family friendly affordable Bunkum is really a coalition of 3 coalitions, and that includes the Asheville Regional Transit Coalition, the Asheville Bunkum Preschool Planning Collaborative. These are all big mouthfuls, and then our Success Equation Housing Team, and. From those 3 names, you might gather that the 3 key issues that we're focused on are transit, housing affordability, and access to early childhood education and care. And so as we were, following the news of the kind of impending sale of Mission Hospital, mm-hmm. Moving from a nonprofit organization to being bought by a for-profit, one of the things that triggers is that nonprofits don't pay property tax and all to local government, and so all this property after the sale would be completed then goes on to the property tax rolls for the first time ever. And so as advocates, we've identified these 3 issues and all know that there's some kind of big milestones we'd like to get to that could be realized with additional city or county funding. And as now the city and county have the ability to collect property tax on those properties, that would be new revenue into the city and county streams, new revenue created without having to raise tax rates. And so really, like, when does that ever happen? And so we really felt like this was an opportunity to make sure that, we brought these coalitions together to have a shared agenda for how some of that money should be spent, rather than kind of each staking our own path and end up maybe in competition for funding. And so it was heartening to see that that these 3 coalitions could gather around the same kind of planning table and look at some shared messaging, look at kind of a shared larger budget request for the dollars, and begin to put out that kind of message both publicly and with city council members and county commissioners over the fall, and and we, you know, really began to gain traction, and we started to see, you know, our messages kind of repeated back. We started to see a lot of organizations, and, you know, community-based groups, as well as some, you know, folks in healthcare systems and all kind of endorsed that proposal as like, this is a great idea for, you know, how the city and county should kind of spend this bump in revenue that's going to come in.
Greg, let me ask you, in your opinion, utilizing this intersectional approach that is lifting up transit, affordable housing, and early childhood education as kind of we are in this together, this is not a siloed advocacy effort, would you say that you've been able to leverage it a little bit more, not only just via the budget, but just in terms of like overall awareness?
Yeah, I would like to think so. I mean, we'll see, and you know, as far as the evidence, I think time will tell if we've been able to do that. I think this first year, it was great. I was a member of all three of those coalitions, and there were some other members who had kind of cross affiliations. But when we first kind of came together, part of the work was just like kind of, you know, introducing each coalition to one another. And again, it's like with that kind of work, it's not that, you know, folks, you had to do a lot of convincing that the issue was important.
Right.
But I think that what is different about it is that kind of a shared strategy to move three pretty big issues together and to begin to talk about them in kind of this larger picture of like, these are fundamentals for building a community where families can afford to you know, live and grow and thrive, was different. And I think that we saw some success, and I think that that was exciting about it. That really, you know, warmed my heart to see that come together. And I think that the wins that we saw on this budget, while it wasn't, you know, did it kind of give us our entire wish list? Mm-hmm. No, but it really did achieve something. And I think that it gives us something to build on going forward. The challenge with working at city and county budget levels is that you can't really commit future budgets and lock them down. So each year you've got to jump back in and fight for those gains and build on that. So we still got work to do, but I was encouraged. I think it was an exciting, you know, kind of best practice and way to kind of build and strengthen across multiple things.
Awesome. So I can imagine a lot of the advocates and nonprofits that are around the table. For the listeners who have kind of a stake in any of these issue areas, are there opportunities for them to weigh in on some of these matters?
Sure. So the work of Family Friendly Affordable Buncombe is not done. We've, you know, moved as quickly as we could and tried to kind of navigate this first year where, you know, the original numbers being reported for how much new revenue would come in. Initial estimates were around maybe $15 million combined between the city and county. When it finally came down to it, the number for this first fiscal year was a lot less. It was at about $5.9 million, so significantly less. So, you know, we spent a lot of time, you know, trying to figure out like, well, how much money is going to be available? What is our request going to look like? And how do we kind of, there was questions of whether or not it would even show up in this first fiscal year. So now that we've kind of got this first year under our belt, and just from our own analysis, of that $5.9 million that was new revenue available to the city and county combined, we saw 76% of that be allocated as new funding for our three areas. Mm-hmm. So for the transit, housing, and early childhood. So that was a pretty significant portion of the new funding.
Sure.
We expect that the revenue will likely increase in the next year's budget. And so this year, folks are wanting to get involved. We'd like to bring on more coalition partners and more folks who are interested in continuing to kind of have these be the three driving issues, because we'll need to set up for next year's budget process. And really, for city and county, those kind of analysis work begins in the fall.
Yeah.
And then the springtime is kind of when there's more public meetings and kind of, you know, getting a sense of the direction. And then the votes are usually happening in May.
Right.
But there's a lot of opportunity, and we'll need a lot of voices chiming in.
With what you were able to leverage on the city and county level regarding money allocation, and with your analysis, how different is it going to look in year two?
Well, that's a good question. We think that the amount of revenue for the city and county is going to bump up to maybe just shy of $11 million mm-hmm. in terms of new tax revenue. So that's, you know, a significant bump from this first year. And, you know, quite frankly, if we're able to kind of hold 76% to 80% of that new funding and mm-hmm. direct it towards these things, that will be, that'd be impressive. Yeah. I think it'd be great if it was 100%. Let's make no bones about it.
Yeah, let's go for it.
let's go for the 100. But so I think we'll have some new funds to play with. And the things, just to highlight kind of where the key asks were for us this first year, we were looking at the city to really invest in its transit master plan mm-hmm. So that we can, you know, build the kind of bus system our city deserves. And so we've got the transit master plan. It's a long document, but folks can find it on the city's website. And it has a prescription for, like, each year what we need to be funding to really kind of build, mm-hmm. Better service, longer hours, more frequency. And so we were trying to get funding for that first year. The actual funds that came in weren't quite there for the full first year, but it's a starting point, and we'll acknowledge that and keep pushing. At housing and early childhood, we're really funding requests specifically at the county level, and because the city has already passed its housing bond, so it's got a lot of money it's trying to spend right now. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a new request for funding for housing there. At the county level, we were asking for new commitment to their housing affordability programs and dollars available. We did see that increase by about 1.4 in new spending, bringing their total for housing at the county up to about 3.8. And then also at the county, they approved, as part of our request, an early childhood education fund that they funded at $3.6 million annually. And of that $3.6 million, we saw about $1.9 being new funding for this fiscal year. But it's fabulous now that the county has got kind of a dedicated funding source, and we really feel that that's, you know, in part of the FAB campaign this year.
You mean the FAB?
FAB. It was a fabulous win.
So, Greg, thank you so much for that breakdown regarding how you all came to be and where things stand right now. And I imagine that there is a website that folks can go to learn more.
There is. It is familyfriendlybuncombe.org.
Family. Not affordable?
No, just family-friendly. we had to like cut a word out. It just got too wordy. So familyfriendlybuncombe.org.
Cool.
Check it out, and we'll have our analysis, our year one analysis, up there probably by the time the show airs, so
awesome.
Folks can see it and check it out.
Looking forward to it. So let's go ahead and switch gears here, Greg. Let's talk about our friends over in Raleigh around the state budget. Talk a little bit about Medicare expansion, raise the age, and early childhood funding. This is where you get to go wild and real wonky. You can start wherever you want, but what's going on with the state budget?
So as we speak for this interview, we still don't have a full state budget. The governor vetoed it. Folks, your listeners are probably aware of that. This is significant because it's really been the first time in years that a gubernatorial veto can stand, right?
Yeah.
So it's a new day in North Carolina, but we're not sure like where it's going to get us ultimately. So the governor really made clear that he wanted to see Medicaid expansion, and so for folks listening. To be clear, that under the Affordable Care Act that Congress passed, also known as Obamacare, states had the option to expand Medicaid,
right.
which to cover uninsured adults who are up to 133% mm-hmm. of the poverty line. Originally, in the original Obamacare bill, just for a little context, that was going to be a requirement, like states had to. But when the the Supreme Court heard the bill. They upheld his attempt to kind of strike it all down. Mm-hmm. They said, no, you can't strike it all down. But in fact, we will say that you can't force states to expand Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of created this like hole in this piece of public policy that has haunted us since then. And, you know, what it meant is that you had some states who were like, yeah, of course we want to do that. We want to have as many folks insured and covered as we can. There's federal funding on the table, so we're bringing back, tax dollars coming back into our county. It's creating jobs. It's insuring people. It's like it's a best case for business and just the moral argument of people should have health care.
Right.
And so what we saw largely, not surprisingly, is that a lot of the southeastern states were refusing to expand Medicaid and others were. And so and then you begin to have this even further delineation where states were applying for waivers. And so they were doing these kind of hybrid expansions of not just kind of, you know, if you meet the qualifications as originally intended, you're going to be insured. It was then like, well, we're going to put some work requirements or we're going to do some additional reporting and different things like that. And so there's now kind of this mix of states that just, you know, did flat out expansion, states that have done some kind of a waiver, and then states like us who still haven't even gotten in the game. So this year, Governor Cooper is like, nope, we need a budget that expands Medicaid and gets North Carolina where it needs to be. He vetoed, and so there are still negotiations. And there was a bill introduced this year, sponsored by Republicans, that would have done one of these kind of hybrid waiver expansions. It would have had North Carolina have a work requirement. It would have required some co-pays. It wasn't ideal, mm-hmm. but it would have gotten us into the game. And so advocates like ourselves and NC Child and all were optimistic that maybe that would go through. There's still some question of whether or not that's what's being negotiated now, mm-hmm. so we won't know. The negotiations for the final budget are, not meetings that we're privy to attend, but I think that it's really important to
note. Once that we can crash, though.
Yeah, it's really important that, we kind of pay attention to where this falls
Absolutely.
Out, because the challenge is that the budget is such a complex piece of policy. It's where the funding for things like Raise the Age, which we have been fighting for so long, and this is the year it's going to go into effect. But if we don't have funding for it, it's going to be a disaster.
I mean, we all celebrated when it was passed, and now we're still at a point of like, okay, let's go ahead and put this into effect.
And that's so the funding for it is tied up in the budget. Our school districts.
Can you say what Raise the Age is?
Yeah. So North Carolina was previously one of two states in the country that automatically sent 16 and 17 year olds into the adult criminal system, regardless of offense, versus what other states do is treat them in the juvenile justice system, which is more about, comprehensive work with the youth and the family and the community to really help, make it so that it's not a permanent mark, and to do the kind of things necessary to get mental health, substance abuse treatment, any kind of things like that just aren't available to us in the adult system. So we're really excited that the legislature, finally passed that, but now it's set to be to kind of go live here in, I believe, December, but it's needs funding because it's mm-hmm. like new core counselors, new, mm-hmm. Like the system needs money. Otherwise, it can't handle that transition. So that's in the budget. School system funding is in the budget as schools are, we're getting closer to schools opening. And, will we have teacher raises? What's the budget look like for school systems? They need to know that before they open their doors, that they've got slots that they're holding to fill until they get a budget. So that's being hung up. Things like early childhood education, funding for are we going to have new funds available for NC Pre-K? All kinds of children issues are held up. So it's not just a one issue
never is
document. It's complex. And so, but we also really believe that we are long overdue to expand health coverage to adults with Medicaid expansion. So we got to get that done. It'll be interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned.
Well, outside of just watching, Greg, you mentioned, obviously, with a budget, it is a very complex piece of legislation that takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of lobbying. It takes a lot of advocating. For listeners who, again, you know, have a stake in a lot of these issues, it's going to impact their livelihood. It's going to impact the ways in which they're able to exist in this world. Where are there points to be able to voice thoughts, concerns, and when you say keep an eye on what's going on, how, I mean, because I'm all about government transparency, but as you know, that's not always the case. How can folks just be just generally like aware of what is going on in Raleigh?
Yeah. So, you know, we'll say that the budget is less transparent of a process than I and other advocates would like to see. The way that North Carolina legislature does its budgeting is often hard to follow intentionally, and usually is very kind of insider political thing. You know, like it's not a lot of public hearings, so there's not a lot of kind of meetings you can attend. You kind of get that final document, and they usually rush a vote on it.
Yeah.
So we need to work to really, you know, in coming years to make that process more easy to follow. Mm-hmm. In general, a good place to keep an eye on, you know, if you really want to dive into the policy, we do have a really good website for the state legislature in terms of being able to see votes, look up bills and text, and follow along. And that's at nclege.gov, nclege.gov. So check that out. And then the other thing that I would recommend is, you know, find those organizations that focus on the issues that you care about at the state level, and get on their email list, because they usually provide excellent analysis of, you know, your issue in bills and in the budget, and kind of keep you up to date. And then that kind of information you can use to call your legislators, to call legislative leaders, and know kind of when's the best time to reach out. And so one of our key state partners with our work is NC Child, ncchild.org. They do great, you know, great overviews and research on children's issues in the budget.
Awesome, Greg. Well, this has been great. You shared a lot of resources. If you don't mind, here for the listeners to kind of close things out, can you just remind folks of where they can go to find out all this information, both with family-friendly affordable bunkum, as well as some of the resources regarding the state budget?
Yes, be happy to. So family-friendly affordable bunkum is familyfriendlybunkum.org. If you want to follow NC Child, it's ncchild.org, and they also have a Twitter presence. For us, some of the best places to follow us are at Facebook, at Facebook Success Equation, and then on Twitter, we're CFCIS Advocacy on Twitter if you want to follow us there.
Awesome. Greg, thank you so much for joining us to talk about all the things that you do.
It's always fun to be with you, Gary. Love it.
Appreciate it, Greg.